This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for June 2014. Well, to be honest, we don't have a lot of opportunities to observe the night sky in June, but if you are prepared to wait up sometime towards midnight, there are still some very nice things to see. Leo the Lion will be setting over in the west, and the brightest star you'll see in the south is Arcturus, in the constellation of Bootes. Further over and rising high in the east is the very bright star Vega in Lara. And over to its left, a little lower down, is Deneb, the brightest star in the constellation of Cygnus. Below them both, and fairly low over the horizon to start with, is Altair in Aquila. The three stars, Altair, Vega and Deneb, make up what is called the summer triangle. A nice thing to look for with a pair of binoculars is to run up from Altair towards Vega about a third of the way. You actually pass a fairly dark region of the Milky Way called the Cygnus Rift, and in there is in fact a nice asterism. It's Brocky's cluster, but nominally called the coat hanger, because it looks just like an upside down coat hanger. And over to its left, not far above the eastern horizon to start with, is the rather nice, very small constellation of Delphinus the Dolphin. And of course, you shouldn't miss out on Ursa Major, fairly high in the northwest. Its two bright stars, Merak and Dubhe, pointing towards Polaris. Three stars make up the handle of the plough, and the central one is actually a double star, Mizar and Alcor, the horse and rider. But in fact, with a telescope, you can see that Mizar is also itself a double star. So a very nice thing to look at. Well, let's have a look at the planets. Well, as June begins, Jupiter is setting nearly 3 hours after sunset. It is, however, now well past its best and fading from minus 1.9 to minus 1.8 during the month. That's actually still pretty bright, while its angular diameter shrinks from 33 to 32 arc seconds. It's moving towards superior conjunction with the Sun on July the 24th. By month's end, it will be low above the horizon after sunset, forming an almost straight line to the left of Castor and Pollux in the constellation of Gemini. With a small telescope, you should still be able to observe the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. But due to the low elevation, details on the surface, such as the equatorial bands and the great red spot, will be harder to see than in the last few months. Saturn. Saturn came into opposition on May the 10th. That's when it's nearest to us, highest in the sky, due south. It lies in Libra, midway between Spica and Antares, and shines with a magnitude of plus 0.2, fading somewhat to plus 0.4 by the end of the month. Its fully illuminated disk has a diameter of about 18 arc seconds. It's now moving slowly westwards in the sky towards a double star system, Alpha Librae, and ends the month just 2.5 degrees above and a little to its left. The good news is that the rings, with a diameter of about 40 arc seconds, are now opened out to about 21 degrees to the line of sight and present a magnificent view. With a small telescope, you should be able to spot the Cassini division that lies between the A and B rings, if the seeing conditions are good. Sadly, for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, Saturn is now lying in the more southerly part of the ecliptic, so even when due south, it doesn't get that high in the sky. And even worse, this will not improve for many years to come. It is possible to see Mercury towards the beginning of the month, given a low horizon in the west-northwest, perhaps about 45 minutes after sunset. But it fades rapidly from plus 1.2 as June begins to plus 3.4 by the 11th, and will soon be lost to view as it moves towards inferior conjunction. That means it's lying between the Earth and the Sun on June the 19th. Well, Mars, following its opposition in April, Mars is now receding rapidly, and will dim from magnitude minus 0.5 to zero during the month. As it does so, its angular size will shrink from about 11.8 down to 9.5 arc seconds. so try to observe it early in the month if weather allows. It starts June just 2.5 degrees below Porrima, Gamma Virginis, and ends the month 3.5 degrees to the right of Spica, Alpha Virginis. It'll be highest in the sky as darkness falls, and gives us a last chance, this apparition, to observe features on the surface. Finally, Venus. It starts June, shining at magnitude minus 3.9, is moving rapidly across the lower part of Aries and into Taurus, where it passes between the Pleiades and the Hyades clusters on the 28th, and will be seen low above the eastern horizon half an hour before sunrise. It ends the month 3.5 degrees above Aldebaran. Its disk, now showing a full gibbous phase as it moves beyond the sun, drops in angular size from 14 to 12 arc seconds. But at the same time, the percentage of the disk which is illuminated increases from 77 to 85%. As a result, the effective area reflecting the sun's light stays almost constant, so there's only a drop of 0.1 magnitudes in brightness. Well, finally, what about the highlights this month? Well, Saturn, obviously, is the highlight. It reached opposition on the 10th of May, so is now due south and highest in the sky soon after darkness falls. To find it, follow the arc of the plough's handle downwards to first find the orange, bright star Arcturus, and continue down to find the white, first magnitude star Spica in Virgo. Saturn, a little brighter than Spica, lies in Libra down to its lower left and will appear slightly yellow in colour. Held steady, binoculars should enable you to see Saturn's brightest moon, Titan, with its magnitude of 8.2. And a small telescope will show you the rings. A larger telescope will actually see great beauty. The outermost rings A and B are separated by a gap called Cassini's division. And lying within the B ring, but far less bright and difficult to spot, is the C or crepe ring. As I said earlier, the rings are now fairly widely separated, so we see them well. Twice each orbit, the ring plane becomes edge-on. That last happened in 2009. They're now opening out, and they'll continue to do so until May 2017. They then narrow until March 2025, when they will appear edge-on again. So some things to look for in June. Well, two nice things are the globular cluster M13 in Hercules and the double-double star in Lyra. Hercules lies between Arcturus and Vega, and the four brightest stars make what is known as the Keystone. Two-thirds up the right-hand side is the globular cluster M13. Which is the best globular cluster, it's a spherical grouping of perhaps a million stars that we can see in the northern sky. I've actually put on a picture on the night sky webpage of M13 that I actually imaged about 1 to 3 o'clock this morning, so you might like to have a look at that. Over in Lyra, just to the left of the bright star Vega, is the multiple star system Epsilon Lyrae, often called the double-double. With binoculars, a binary star is seen, but when observed with a telescope, when the seeing is good, each of those two stars is itself revealed to be a double star, hence the name double-double. Towards the end of June is a very good time to spot noctilucent clouds. They're also known as polar mesospheric clouds, and you see them in the deep twilight towards the north from our latitude. They are the highest clouds in the atmosphere at heights of around 50 miles or 80 kilometres. Normally they're too faint to see, but they're visible sometimes late June, early July, when they're illuminated by sunlight from below the northern horizon, whilst the lower parts of the atmosphere are in shadow. Their cause is not fully understood, and they appear to be increasing in frequency, brightness and extent. Could that be due to climate change? So on a clear night, when the light is draining from the northwestern sky long after sunset, take a look towards the north and you might just spot them. Finally, just four conjunctions when things are close together. Between the 2nd and the 4th of June, about an hour after sunset, looking towards the west-northwest, you should be able to spot Jupiter lying below Pollux in Germany. and given a very good low horizon, you may also see the far fainter planet Mercury, well below and a little to the right of Castor. On June the 7th, again about an hour after sunset, Mars will be visible just 3 degrees above and a little to the left of a waxing gibbous moon. June the 10th, again after sunset, Saturn and a gibbous moon come together. Looking south-southeast after sunset, Saturn will be seen just under 2 degrees up and to the right of the moon, which will be 3 days before full. And finally, on June the 24th, before dawn, you might be able to spot Venus and a very thin crescent moon. So looking east before dawn, Venus lying between the Pleiades and the Hyades clusters in Taurus will be about 2.5 degrees to the left of a thin crescent moon. That would actually make a very nice wide field image. Well, I know there's not a lot of time to observe during June, but do try and make the most of it.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now for everyone listening in the Southern Hemisphere, here's John Field with the night sky for the Southern Hemisphere for June.
Kia ora and welcome to the June Jodcast from Carter Observatory, Wellington, New Zealand. Here in the Southern Hemisphere, we are now experiencing our long winter nights and our short days. In the west after sunset, Jupiter is visible for the first half of the month, but will quickly slip into the twilight and disappear. Sirius, the brightest star in the night sky, is also visible in the west after sunset, and due to our long winter nights, it is now visible in the southeast before sunrise. Our southeastern evening sky is dominated by the zodiac constellations of Scorpius and, following behind, Sagittarius the Archer. The red star Antares marks the heart of the Scorpion. This name means the rival of Mars. To Māori and some Polynesian cultures, Scorpius is seen as a fishing hook, a much more familiar item to them here in the South Pacific. One of the Māori names for Antares is Rehua, and it marks the eye of the hook, and it represents the blood of Maui staining the hook. The region around Scorpius is home to a large number of star clusters and nebulae, which are easily observed in binoculars and telescopes. Nearby to Antares are two globular clusters, M4 and NGC-6144. The M prefix and number are from the catalogue created by Charles Messier that he published in 1771. NGC is a new general catalogue of 7,840 objects. M4 is a brighter of the two and is easily seen in binoculars and from a dark sky site and may be visible with the unaided eye. NGC-6144 is much fainter at 10th magnitude and is visible in smaller telescopes. On the curved body of the Scorpion, there are a number of visual double stars that make a lovely sight to the unaided eye, binoculars, or in telescopes. Near the stinger of the Scorpion, there is a naked eye cluster of stars that appears like a comet. Called NGC-6231, this is a cluster of stars similar in size to the Pleiades, but further away at 6,000 light-years. The stars in this cluster are much brighter than those in the Pleiades, and if placed at the same distance, they would shine as bright as Sirius, making a stunning sight in our night sky. Also nearby is the star cluster M7. Appearing as a haze to the unaided eye, this cluster appears as a nice scattering of stars in binoculars or wide-field telescopes. Also in this region, but much fainter, is the butterfly cluster M6. Telescopes reveal an elongated cluster of stars that forms the butterfly's wings, and with imagination, a central body can be seen. The neighbouring constellation Sagittarius also hosts a large number of nebulae, open and globular star clusters. The constellation represents an archer in Babylonian mythology. The brightest stars of Sagittarius form an asterism called the teapot. Lambda Sagittarii marks the top of the teapot and nearby is the globular cluster M22. It is one of the brightest in our night sky and can be easily seen in binoculars. Perhaps the most spectacular clusters and nebulae are the Lagoon and Trifid. The Lagoon nebula M8 gets its name as it appears as a compact cluster of stars surrounded by a circle of nebulosity with a dark rift. The western part of M8 is dominated by the two bright stars of 6 magnitude. The eastern part includes a loose cluster of stars. The Trifid or M20 is a small region of nebulosity nearby to the Lagoon. With a 200mm or greater telescope and a dark sky, it should be possible to spot the dark lanes that split the nebulosity into three sections. Long exposure photographs of this region reveal lovely clouds of gas glowing pink and blue with dark lanes and thousands of background stars. M23 is an open cluster 2,000 light-years away, consisting of over 100 stars being visible, forming curving arcs and chains. M24 is a bright region of stars that is often called the Small Sagittarius Star Cloud. This cloud includes a number of dark nebulae superimposed on a brilliant starry background. M25 is an open cluster with a number of deep yellow stars and 2,000 light years away. M55 at magnitude 7.4 is a bright globular cluster discovered in 1752. Binoculars will reveal it as a hazy star, and progressively larger tasks will reveal more and more stars. The Milky Way is at its brightest, widest, and densest in the region around Scorpius Sagittarius. The Arabians called the Milky Way Al-Nahar, the river. The Chinese refer to it as the River of Heaven. Tamari is Te Ikaroa, the long fish. Today we know we are looking along the plane of our galaxy and seeing the glow of the many millions of stars that stretch across our sky. The region of Sagittarius is in the direction of the galactic centre, which is about 30,000 light years away. The dark lanes visible in this region are clouds of dust and gas that may eventually form star clusters. It thins through Crux and Carina and then fades into the western sky. A scan along the Milky Way with binoculars will find many more star clusters and some glowing clouds of gas. In the south, the large clouds of Magellan and the small cloud of Magellan are in the lower southern sky, easily seen on a dark, moonless night. They are two small galaxies about 160 and 200,000 light years away. Close to home, we have the planet Saturn in our evening sky towards the north and is well placed for viewing amongst the stars of Libra. Mars is also in our northern sky after sunset. Saturn is past opposition and it will begin to fade and decrease in size when viewed through a telescope. The ring's end disk and its largest moon, Titan, will still be easily seen through small telescopes. Venus is a brilliant morning star. It rises around 5 a.m. at the beginning of June, but near 6 a.m. by the 30th. In mid-June, Venus will be directly above the Makariki Pleiades star cluster as it begins its dawn appearance or heliacal rising. The southern winter solstice is on the 21st of June, and it marks the time when the sun rises and sets at its most northerly points here in the southern hemisphere. Many cultures saw this as an important time and held special celebrations to mark its date. In Aotearoa, New Zealand, the dawn rising of Matariki, Pleiades, and Puanga or Rigel coincides with our winter solstice and was seen as a herald of the new year. We hope you've enjoyed our Jodcast and we wish you all clear skies.